Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show any time of day that you want, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Once again, we're moving up the dial to 101.1 FM. That will be our new home. We're experiencing what we might call variability on that frequency. If you have any comments, please write us and tell us where you're listening from and what kind of signal you're getting. Write to info@ksfr.org. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to Cynthia Ruffin about Baggage, which is a new and stunning performance, which is starting in Santa Fe and touring New Mexico. And we are also going to be talking to Living Treasure Mary Lou Cook. Right now, because it's the first Wednesday of the month, I would like to welcome Bill Hutchison from the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society here, as he is every first Wednesday of the month, to talk about animals. And I'd also like to welcome Linda Pelletty of the Bridging the World's Animal Sanctuary. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Great to have you here.
I'm amazed that you got that out. It looked like it was going to be touch and go for a little bit there.
I didn't. I mean, it was full of stops and all sorts of things.
Full of radio magic.
It's a good thing you can't see us. It's bad enough to hear. But anyway, what is happening, Bill, at the animal shelter?
We have been pretty busy. As you know, we opened our spay-neuter clinic, and we did some math the other day. We've done several hundred already at that new clinic that's been open since the middle of July. We were able to do a lot of them for free thanks to some money that came from the state legislature, but that has dried up. Nevertheless, it's still very inexpensive, so if you need to get that done, do it. I will also give you a sneak preview of something we have coming up. We're going to target cats, not literally.
You're going to target cats.
Not literally.
Can we do away with the military metaphors for 5 minutes?
We're going to focus our laser beams. No, wait, that's not going to work either. We're going to really
gently open our arms and embrace.
Cats have issues in this city. That's the reality. Cats have issues that we have helped them have. And at some point in September, we're going to go crazy and do as many cat spays and neuters as we can and get as many cats out of the shelter as we can. This has been a strange year because usually there's a seasonable variation in our intake of cats. When it gets cold, the cats stop coming in. It didn't happen, despite the kind of winter that we had. We had cats all winter long.
It's global warming.
That's what I think. It's also cats getting tougher and tougher. And, you know, folks, if you don't want cats to be the next dominant species in the next 10 years or so, then we got to get on board here.
So what are you actually doing?
We're going to do a massive spay-neuter effort for a week. We'd like to spay and neuter 500 cats. If we do 500 cats, you figure maybe 250 of those will be female, an average litter of 4 cats per female, which is a low estimate, but easier math for me. That's 1,000 cats that we are not going to get into the shelter come next spring. That's really important to us. We're also going to try and get as many cats adopted out. We've got 500 we want to get spayed and neutered and 100 that we want to get adopted out. And if we can do that, then we're going to feel very, very happy.
Are there any special cute fluffy ones that you want to talk about?
Well, there's one guy, there's a dog at the shelter that I want to talk about. His name's Garfield, and I'm going to start bringing in some of our long-term residents to talk to you about, because they're really the ones that need the most help, and they're the ones who we really need to focus our attentions on. Now, Garfield, he's not quite 2. He's a tricolor border collie mix. And I'm not going to lie to you, Garfield has some issues. He is brilliant, but he's also really in dire need of some training and some discipline, as are we all, I suspect. But he has one of the most magnificent personalities of any dog I've ever met. He is enthusiastic. He is so pro-person. He's a little bit anti-cat, but I think there are a lot of people who might fall into the same boat. But we really need to get him a home. If you are somebody who is willing to take the time with an excellent dog and put in the time that it will take to make this guy the happy guy that he wants to be, then this is the dog for you. Call the shelter, 983-4309, and ask for Garfield. He'll come to the phone.
Jane Carson has just joined us as well. She is with PAWS, which is People for Animal Welfare Society. It's great to have you here, too.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. Sorry I'm a little late.
That's okay. We're coming up on the Week of the Animal.
Yes, this is the 8th year, Mary Charlotte, and We are excited because we're going to be down on the plaza. I have lots of animals down there, humane education. It's going to be an exciting day, and we hope everybody will come on the 15th.
Now, is it a day or a week?
It's a week, but we have the celebration on the plaza on Saturday, the 15th of September.
And that's the first day of the Week of the Animal?
Yes. Normally, we have the celebration at the end, but this year, because of the way the days fell, it will start on the 15th and end on the 23rd. The governor's proclaimed that week, New Mexico Week for the Animals. We'll be doing lots of spay neuters as a statewide event. So,
and Jane, I'd like to hop in and just underscore that this is the first time in a long time we've had animals on the plaza up for adoption. Is that right?
It's been 2 years.
2 years,
yeah.
So
yes, it is. And hopefully we'll get a lot of little pets adopted that day and afterwards, too.
Now, it's also an interesting moment because the Companion Animal Alliance, which maybe you can tell us about, is really coming together for this.
You're definitely outnumbered by Alliance members at this table here.
Well, Charlotte. I feel that I should be an honorary member.
We brought you a T-shirt.
What is the Companion Animal Alliance?
Well, it's an alliance of Northern New Mexican rescue organizations, and including Española Animal Shelter and the Santa Fe Humane Society and Shelter. You know, it's interesting that in my experience, a lot of people see us as being at odds with one another a lot of the time, figure that somehow we're in competition. And I think it's been very gratifying to have the community start to see a united face on this effort. So, you know, the goal is to have fewer animals in the shelter and more animals adopted, and we come together to, you know, approach that from a lot of angles, including spay and neuter, placement of older animals, rescue of animals off of death row.
And doing away with unwanted teen pregnancy, so to speak, among animals.
Yeah. Babies having babies.
Exactly. So mobile adoption fair is from 11 to 3 on Saturday, the 15th of September. You are from Jane Pedelty, Bridging the World's Animal Sanctuary. Linda Pedelty. It is very early in the morning, ladies and gentlemen. tell us about Bridging the World's.
Well, Bridging the World's is a bit of a unique animal sanctuary. We're south of town. And unique in that there are no chains, there are no runs. So this is a free-range sanctuary. Right now, our efforts are focused exclusively on dogs. So, Bill, as you guys handle the cats, we'll do our best with the dogs. the majority of our animals are coming off of death row in municipal shelters. So we're sort of trying to clean up a little bit on the back end as well. We are the ones that you'll see around town quite often. People don't come out to our sanctuary. We come into town and come to the folks. So we're the folks that you'll see around town often on a Saturday in front of Whole Foods or in front of Zillion Guido's, bringing our animals in.
What makes an animal unadoptable, and how do you get it to be adoptable?
Well, you know, Bill can speak to this, I'm sure. A lot of the animals in our area suffer horrible neglect and sometimes horrible abuse. And with patience and diligence, they are often able to recover, come back into balance, and live really normal, fulfilled, happy lives, be great companions. But it requires patience and it requires time. And the municipal shelters just don't have the luxury of being able to devote that to every single animal that comes their way.
Do you have a limit on the number of animals that you can take in?
Yeah, we do. Right now we have about 41 animals at the sanctuary with about, I think, almost another 20 in foster. Our foster program really allows us to help out animals in distress when we're at capacity. Maybe half of those that are at the sanctuary are we deem adoptable. Robert Hayes and Beverly Antias run the sanctuary, founded the sanctuary and run the sanctuary. And over the years, again, Jane and Bill will attest to this, there are going to be animals who just are not going to be adoptable, and they live out their lives with Robert and Beverly at the sanctuary.
And so it's a real, almost a hospice in that way, as some of the other animal sanctuaries are as well.
I can't think of one that isn't.
You know, I was thinking of something that Linda was talking about with municipal shelters. Northern New Mexico is pretty lucky because both of our shelters are nonprofit shelters, which means whatever the shelters decide they want to do, they can make it happen. We come up with an amazing plan, and we go and we get the money. So sanctuaries like Bridging the Worlds, who are able to help the municipal shelters, city or county-funded shelters, where there aren't a lot of luxuries, there aren't a lot of choices that can be made outside of municipal policy, these sanctuaries are able to help animals that are often just warehoused for a span of time before they're euthanized. It's very sad that that's what's happened, but you'll find that a lot of animal sanctuaries and rescue organizations are able to take up some of the slack that municipalities themselves can't take care of on their own.
Because of working together, too, this euthanasia... The adoption rate has gone up. We like to accentuate the positive, and the adoption rate has gone up. It continues to go up, working together. Pecos People for Animal Welfare out in Pecos, we don't warehouse or hold animals. We try to work with the shelter primarily, have a partnership that they take the animals we can't get adopted. And they have adopted everyone we've taken in there. It's 100% adoption rate.
Incredible.
So people think, don't take your dogs to the shelter. That is not true. I think the staff over there has worked very hard to try to turn that around so that a lot more dogs and cats get adopted than have to be put down.
Linda was talking about the alliance. You know, it's very, what I think a lot of folks who aren't in animal welfare don't see is that there's this vast mechanism of animal welfare groups, and it's very complicated. I mean, there's a lot of cogs and wheels turning. And if you want to really see something amazing, volunteer at one of these organizations and get involved in the partnerships and collaborations that are happening statewide. And you're going to see something that's a model for other states, but that's also really very progressive and pretty amazing. It's not... I would amend what Linda said earlier. We haven't always gotten along, and I would like to say that it's always been great, and that some of the enmity that's perceived was imaginary. But you know, really, everybody has a mission in mind, and sometimes you can lose sight of that mission in the face of other issues. But the alliance has really changed that, and it has gotten that big clockwork running, and now there's a mainspring of care for animals that fuels us all and that we all run off of, and it's amazing. It's really like nothing that I've ever seen or been a part of.
The model of cooperation among organizations that have essentially the same mission, maybe not exactly the same mission, seems like such a no-brainer, and I always find it amazing that the people who have the most in common tend to be the most competitive with one another.
Well, you know, there is a human nature aspect to that. I think that, you know, you find the area that you disagree on seems to be easier to do somehow. But I know that through the alliance, and for me personally, through the collaborative adoption events, it's been personally also really a joyous thing, because the rescue biz can be kind of lonely. And it's been very gratifying to come together. This is going to be the third time that we've come together to do a large shared adoption event. So it feels really good for the rescue organizations as well. And I would like to plug, we're always looking for hands on deck. Most of these, it is hard work, and most of these adoption events are also a total scream and a blast, and they're very, very fun.
Now, the hands on deck would be patting dogs' heads and stuff like that.
Yeah, we'll hand
taking,
you a leash.
Taking care of the dogs.
Yeah.
This is Animal Day. We're talking to Linda Peddlety, Jane Carson, and Bill Hutchison. I imagine these events are also opportunities for one-on-one education with the people who are looking at the animals.
Absolutely. That's one of the stools of our whole program is, I should say, peers. humane education, spay neuter, and of course getting good homes for these animals, because there's just too many. So we'll have a lot of humane education booths on the plaza on the 15th.
We say around the shelter a lot, you don't know until you know. And folks who show up to these, just regular old community members, you see a dawning of realization from time to time, just during a regular old conversation with another human being, and that's a pretty amazing thing to be part of.
What are some of the things that you, all of you, having worked with animals for so long, consider basic that then you realize that somebody in the public doesn't know?
Try not to get bitten in the face. That's my number one.
Important safety tip.
And the need for spay neuter.
Spay neuter, I would say. Is
and
that.
Neuter, especially.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's there's a popular graphic that I think we even have it posted on our website. You might have it as well. That shows the exponential rate of growth from one unplanned litter. And this became very, very real to me at a particular adoption event for Bridging the World, where we worked all day to get four or five dogs adopted. We were high-fiving and feeling really great and packing up, and someone showed up with a litter to leave to go out to the sanctuary. And in one fell swoop, we were up two dogs after tremendous
having,
work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You do it for a few years, and you see sometimes some of the same folks coming in year after year with litter after litter. We've talked about it before, that in the spring you dread the laundry basket or the Rubbermaid tub or whatever it is that's got all the puppies and kittens in it. And that's the thing. I think that spay-neuter is important. It's really, really important. But there's this assumption that I think other people will take care of it. And animal welfare is not the responsibility of the three people at this table. It's not the responsibility of the members of the Companion Animal Alliance. It's not the responsibility of people who really like animals. It's a community responsibility that all of us share. And until really everybody steps up, then we're not going to make the massive impact that we want to make. We're going to keep doing it because it's really important to us. But as the community continues to join us and continues to be a part of this effort, that's what will make the difference in spay and neuter and adoption and all these areas that we're really focusing on.
Tell us more, Jane, about People for Animal Welfare Society.
We're out of pause, and we've been in business since the mid-90s. Have been doing a lot of spay neuters. We've primarily worked with foster homes. And in the last couple of years have put most of our energy, we're a very small group, into spay-neuter to try to get a handle on the overpopulation. And
do you work mostly in the local Pecos region?
No, we work everywhere there's a need. Today I go out, it is in San Miguel County, and pick up 12 puppies. Two moms wandered in. This guy called me and said, you have to come get these doggies. I just adopted or let these two females in, and all of a sudden they had two litters. So I'm going out and pick up those little puppies today and hopefully have them ready for the adoption maybe on the 15th. But we'll see what kind of condition they're in. But Pecos, recently, I have to share some great news with you. We were giving a half acre right in the center of Pecos on the corner of 63 and 50. And we're going to put a humane education one-room schoolhouse out there. So
Pecos is perfect for a one-room schoolhouse.
We'll be doing lots of workshops for kids to get them interested, and we're very excited about that.
So, Week of the Animal. We know about the event happening on Saturday, the 15th of September, on the plaza, 1 to 3. Is it mostly dogs or dogs and cats?
Dogs and cats.
Dogs and cats. And what happens the rest of the week?
We have, throughout the state, we're doing spay-neuter clinics. And if anyone's listening to this that would like to participate in another area, just give me a call at 505-466-1525. That's 505-466-1525, and let me know, and I can set up what we need is a vet in the community that will do the spay-neuters, and I'll set up an account with them, and we'll get going.
Free or low cost, or how does it work?
Low cost. If they cannot pay, though, they just fill out a grant form, and we can cover the cost.
You know, Mary Charlotte, I want to add on here, all three of these organizations have very, very small budgets considering the amount of work that they do. Volunteers are really necessary for each of us. If you have liked anything you've heard and think that it's time for you to step up and get involved in animal welfare, you can get a hold of Bridging the Worlds or PAWS or the Santa Fe Animal Shelter to do some volunteer work. It will absolutely be the best thing that you've ever done, and you'll be helping members of our community who really need the help, who don't have a voice to speak for themselves.
The very best thing?
The very best
thing. The very best thing, yes. And I'm including that, too. It's even better than that.
And I'd like to, oh, what a great segue to, I would like to throw out our webpage.
Which is
Bridging the Worlds with an S, bridgingtheworlds.org. And we have some great volunteer opportunities coming up as early as Saturday when we're doing a dog wash at Zoe and Guido's from 9 until 1. These are Ahu. They're very, very fun to be on either side of.
A dog wash.
Dog wash. Picture, you know, the teenagers.
Why, that's just
the
dog
tank top.
Wash.
I've seen your dogs, Mary Charlotte. You should definitely show up.
Yeah.
You have a white dog.
What
you can't
you
get away
to say?
With it. Just saying, you know, a white dog requires pristine care.
You're not saying that they roll in dead snakes in the park.
Not on the radio, I'm not.
I would think that dog washing for long-haired dogs, which my dogs are not, would be very important. Are ticks a big problem this time of year?
You know, I don't know about you guys. We've been seeing more ticks than usual. I think it's because of the wet summer that we've had. Absolutely.
Yeah, fleas and ticks. Check your pets out. Yeah, city dwellers and country dwellers, both. If you've got it, you know, those parasites can really start stacking up pretty quick if you're not paying attention. And if you've got them, quick dose of Frontline or some other anti-parasitic will help you and your critter out. So let me mention that, you know, you can always... I know that some of our organizations are not as accessible. Bridging the World is out of town. The shelter is on what is currently the edge of town, although I'm sure it'll be the center of town in about 15 minutes. You can check out our adoptable animals at sfhumanesociety.org, or you can just come by. I mean, certainly the visit's nice. Even if you're not interested in adopting, the animals always like somebody to look at and pay attention to them.
Well, it's getting to be time to go. Anything that you would like to let us know, Jane Carson?
I would like to refer people to our website, too, which is animalweek.org, and email is animalweek@aol.com. So if anyone, you can go there and get the details of the Week for the Animals. Otherwise, give me a call.
And the Week of the Animals once again starts on September 15th on the plaza. There's going to be bunnies, too.
Yes.
It's going to be unbelievable.
Well, yesterday we talked about eating rabbit, and next week we're going to be talking about adopting them.
Yeah, that's not what our rabbits are for, just for clarification, although our rabbits do eat, which is similar in a very loose way.
I'd just like to throw out an invitation. Come and see us. We're at Tekatoo on Saturday, we being Bridging the Worlds, with a couple of glorious litters of young pups, some very, very sweet older guys needing a home. Tekatoo from noon until 3, dog washes and Guido's from 9 until 1. It's going to be a blast.
And if you've missed anything, you can write to me at radiocafe@ksfr.org, and every single piece of information that you have heard today, I can get to you. Actually, you can also just go to the website and listen to it yourself on the podcast, santafe.radiocafe.org. Linda Peddlety, Jane Carson, and Bill Hutchison, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking about baggage. Stay tuned to KSFR. The time is 8:30 here on KSFR, and I would like to welcome Cynthia Ruffin. She is the director of a performance called Baggage from Wise Fool, New Mexico, and Baggage is starting in Santa Fe this weekend and going on a tour all through New Mexico. Welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having us here.
This is a very interesting performance. I saw the rehearsal last night, and it's the stories of four women that actually are taken from very much from real life, from interviews. So it's sort of like somewhere between, more toward theater, but sort of between theater and documentary.
Yeah, it certainly is. People ask me if I wrote the piece, and I see myself more as a collaborator and a reconstructor of the piece, because these are all true-to-life stories. They were taken from interviews that we did on the Pueblos about 3 years ago now. This has been a work in progress for 3 years. And finally,
all of them on the Pueblos?
Yeah. Not all women who lived on the Pueblos, but women who came. We, you know, coordinated with domestic violence service provider agencies and invited other women outside of the Pueblos as well to come in and share their stories. So we had a lot of Pueblo women and a lot of, you know, just northern New Mexico women. And this has kind of been the goal, the aim of the show for this entire time, was to launch a tour that would go right across the state of New Mexico and would partner up in each region that we went to with a domestic violence service provider agency, so that resources could always be available, so that counselors could always be right there to actually talk to people if any of the stories trigger them in any type of ways, and then to work as an educational and outreach tool for the agency and as a potential fundraiser.
So let's talk about some of the stories without giving away too much about the performance, but you have a teenager, you have a New Mexican, Hispanic New Mexican, you have a woman from an Indian Pueblo, and then you have the the helper, the counselor, yeah. who herself is also a victim of domestic violence.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the cool things. It actually started off as a piece that Wiseful was looking to do to engage more of the actors of color in the community. And it turned into something so much bigger and broader. The actors that we have working, the youngest is 21, the eldest is 58. So really, which makes it an intergenerational piece of work. And women from really, really diverse backgrounds. And Wyatta Bradley, who's sitting with us here this morning, plays the role of the domestic violence counselor. It's an African-American woman who, as she's counseling people, realizes that she really does have her own story to tell as well. And she is also in a situation that she needs help to extricate herself from.
Domestic violence, to this day, no matter how much of a PR campaign there is still very much hidden.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's what we're hoping to do with with this piece, is really to take off the shroud of secrecy that surrounds domestic violence, because the only way that any real healing can happen is if people are able to open up and tell their stories and realize that they're not alone and take some of the shame away from the victim, especially, and then the survivor, that this awful thing could actually happen to them.
It is mostly, as we see in the piece, men being violent toward women, but there is also woman-on-woman violence.
Certainly is woman-on-woman violence. And, you know, the other thing is there certainly are men who are also survivors of domestic violence, which is a component that isn't in this play, and really because this is a play about women. So we don't want to take that away either, kind of thing. But, yeah, we've got one of the women in the story is in a same-sex partnership, and her partner, she finds a partner as well who is violent with her. So the idea that men are the only ones who are violent is a fallacy, and the idea that men aren't perpetrated against as well is also a fallacy.
But that is the lion's share of the problem.
Yeah, pretty much. 98% is still, it's 98% of the victims and survivors are women.
We're talking to Cynthia Ruffin about the performance Baggage, which has a kickoff this weekend, Saturday and Sunday at 8 o'clock at Wise Fool Performance Space on Agua Fria, and we'll be giving the directions and phone number and stuff at the end of the segment right now, in just a few minutes. There's also this theme of not only intergenerational women, but violence continuing from one generation to another. So a woman whose father was abusive toward her then finds abusive partners.
Yeah, one of the interesting things was that when we were doing the interviews, and we didn't come across very much in the interviews because those young women didn't come, is that right now in the state of New Mexico and nationally, the fastest growing number of victims and survivors of domestic violence are young women, 16 to 24. Is the age range. And what we're finding with those women is that they are women who were abused at home when they were children and then go on to find abusive partners as they go on and on. The wonderful thing, all of the pieces in this piece, in Baggage, are original, all taken from interviews, with the exception of the pieces that are done by the young woman, because we didn't interview any young women. So Amaryllis,
are young women just less willing to come forward?
Less willing to come forward, less willing to admit that they're having an issue. Still, in a lot of communities, it's acceptable for younger women to be with older men. So those women are less apt to come forward and say anything damaging is happening to them. So I read a lot and took a lot of the statistics and put together a composite of what I wanted. And Amaryllis de Jesus Molesky, who plays that role, actually wrote those monologues.
And very poetic, yeah, and brilliant piece of writing.
She's an incredible, incredible young poet. We'll hear more from her.
So this is all happening this weekend, and the tour is very interesting. You're going to Taos, Farmington, Las Vegas, Albuquerque, Socorro, Silver City, and Las Cruces.
Yes.
And so how do you get people to come to this performance? I mean, if women are not always willing to come out and tell their story, what makes them want to go and hear other people's stories? Is there an inhibition to doing that?
Sometimes, but you know what? The cool thing about theater is theater almost opens up a door and gives people a license that they might not have before. On the one hand, they can go in and just hear the stories and say that's not me. I have nothing to do with that, you know, what's going on there. And the other thing is our show includes puppets. There's shadow puppets in the show. There's a lot of mask work in the show. And people, just by virtue of that whole element that's so inhuman, I suppose, can really grab on to that because, again, it's so far away from who they are. And then, after seeing it, they really get the courage to do something that, for themselves, that maybe they didn't have the courage to do before. We got one of the best letters I received last year was this woman who came to see the show and said she went home and packed her bags and
wow.
left her partner. And that was, you know, if I get one or two women that leave an abusive partner, or men even, one or two people that leave an abusive partner, or find a way to seek help because they saw this and this inspired them to do so, I think then the show is on the right road and doing exactly what it was meant to be doing.
There's a point in the show where some of the backlash voices are heard, where mm-hmm. people are saying, you're breaking up marriages, you're not understanding mm-hmm. men, you're not giving compassion to men, and so on. Do you hear in some of those voices also as a response to your work?
The biggest response, actually, to this work was that a lot of men were coming forward and saying, we're survivors, too. And we really think you should tell our story, too. And my response to that has been, yes, I know that men are also survivors, and I charge you to write the play. I will help you. I will help you put it together. I will help you. Just, you know, just the idea of taking interviews and making a play that way is really a wonderfully compelling way to do work. So that's the biggest thing that we've heard. It's a lot of men have come to the show, which has been great, because I really do think that the healing has to happen on both sides. There can't be healing for one person and not for the other, because it's something that's happening to us all.
And as we've found out in V-Day, too, the Eve Ensler work is very much being embraced by men as well as women.
Yeah, and it has to be. That's the only way for us all to be healthier.
This work, this play, Baggage, has evolved. It's gone through, I think it's always been called Baggage, but it's gone through many phases.
Yeah.
Tell us about the evolution of the play.
Well, it started off as a play that, Robbie Anpino and Vali Rivera put it together. It was their brainchild, and they started working on it. And it started off as a bigger piece that told a lot more stories. And it's kind of the nature of a work in progress, is to start big and pare down and get experimental and see how you go through the process of boiling down all of the information you have and really coming out with the stew, the really juicy stuff that you really want to go forward with.
So four stories can really say more than eight stories.
Yeah, well, four stories that are well crafted and have a really good circular motion that brings it all together in the end, you know, as opposed to eight stories that kind of are thrown out there and don't really have an end, or we don't really understand how they resolve, or you don't get to end with a feeling of hopefulness. So, I mean, I really, you know, came in at a piece that was already in progress. It's some really wonderful work that was really already happening, you know, and I took it in the last phase and recrafted it one more time and came down to the play that we have now.
So what has it been like directing it? What is your role as director of a play like this?
Woo! It's been great.
With one of the actors sitting here silently at the table listening.
It's been really good. There's so much learning that has happened through the whole process. I mean, both times I've directed it now, the first week has been a week of kind of debriefing and kind of getting to know each other and figuring out what it was going to be like walking through this progress of telling these really hard stories. Looking at how these stories trigger us, and then dealing with our own stuff as we walk in to this process. And so I have an idea and a shape to the piece, but I've been a facilitator. I've really let the women walk through the piece and bring to it what they wanted to bring. Like, for instance, Carmela Gonzalez is performing in this piece, and she is playing the role of a Mexican woman who's, you know, stolen back to Mexico by her husband, who's very abusive. And,
like, kidnapped.
Yeah, really, literally kidnapped. And she has a song in the piece that was sung by somebody else in the last in the last play. And in this play, the song is being sung by her, and as we've progressed, we've realized that it needed to be a different song. So it's really been a collaboration of walking through the process with each other and growing so much with each other. And you know what? I'd love Wyatta to say something. How's the process been like?
Wyatta Bradley is on the mic.
It's been an amazing process for me. I could not have asked for a more compelling, challenging piece of work as an actor in this phase of my career. I mean, I'm honored that Cynthia would even ask me to breathe life into this character. And that's really what she's allowed me to do, is she's allowed me to breathe life into this character. And she really has held me as I've walked through this work, because I found a lot of myself in all of these stories, situations I've been in, and situations I thought I had healed from, and yet there was another layer to go through. So it really has been an amazing collaboration. I would say, well, what about this word? Can we change this word? Can we do this thing? And she's just been amazing in how she's listened to all of us, and we've all come together to heal and support each other as we've done this work.
I would think that part of the set of questions in directing a piece like this is, how much raw emotion do you let the actors put forth, and how much do you hold back so that the audience can feel that emotion?
Yeah, I mean, it's both. It's a fine line between it all. I mean, because on the one hand, there's raw emotion that you can go forward with, and then, you know, as Wyatta was saying, you got to be safe too, as you know, as you step into it. And then there is a lot to be said for, I was actually, when I was working with Wyatta, at one point I was saying, you know what, if you hold back your tears, and the audience has got permission to cry.
Exactly.
You know, so it really is a fine line to walk across, but it's been great.
So you are going to go all around New Mexico, and it's a very intensive schedule going from now through the 7th of October.
Uh-huh.
What happens to the piece after that?
I don't know. It goes on the shelf for the moment.
If people, in other words, if let's say you go to one of these towns and somebody says, we'd like to perform this, what, I mean, has that ever happened?
Oh, if they would like to perform it? Oh, certainly. Then we'd work it out with a company, and we would love it if people would take on this piece and take it into their communities and, you know, with their own local theater companies and perform it. That would be amazing. You know, or even going through the process of how to collect stories and build a piece out of the stories in your very own community.
Well, Wise Fool's performance, Baggage, directed by Cynthia Ruffin, kicks off its tour right here in Santa Fe. September 7th and 8th, that's Friday and Saturday?
Friday and Saturday.
At 8 o'clock at Wise Fool Performance Space, which is 2778 D Agua Fria. And I hope you have balloons everywhere, because it's very hard to find.
I know. We'll make sure there's a big sign out there.
But it's on Agua Fria, right down near Siler Road. And the number that people can call for tickets and more information is 992-2588. And you want to give away a couple of tickets?
I would love to give away two tickets for Saturday night for anybody who wants to come and see the show.
So if Laurel is there, after the break, if somebody would like to call 428-1382, 428-1382, but you actually have to call after we break, we will get your names and give away a pair of tickets for Saturday night. Cynthia Ruffin and Wyatta Bradley, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Charlotte.
We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with Mary Lou Cook. Stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Mary Lou Cook. She is a Santa Fe living treasure. She is an artist, minister, teacher, and organizer. We haven't had you on the program for a while. Welcome, Mary Lou.
I'm glad to see you again, always.
Likewise. You have taught and are continuing to teach a class called Getting Organized. What is that all about?
This is a class that's been going on for a long time. It's for people who are overwhelmed, who are really confused,
who have, as certain people at this table do, piles and piles of papers all over their desk.
Yeah. The whole idea of this class, this is a three-hour workshop. It's a one-day thing. I usually teach on Saturday or Sunday mornings. And it's a class about the art of everyday living. It's that simple. And it's that broad, because we cover, I've made a list of all the things we want to be good at in our life, and there are many things that we are required to do in this complicated civilization.
So it goes beyond the dealing with your work and your paperwork and your bills and your insurance and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think the main thing about our lives is our attitude. And we talk about this a lot. We talk about being happy, because our main work is to be happy. And we always have a choice between peace or fear. So I bring in all kinds of things that will help us determine the attitude we want to have. People like to be around someone who's happy. They don't want to be around someone who's glum and depressed and discouraged and so forth.
And getting organized can help with that?
Yes. It's an overview of our life, and we do a great deal in three hours. People really have some lovely letters during the years from people who say it has really made a great difference in their life.
You have recently done a very major move in the category of getting organized, which is you've moved out of your big, sprawling, beautiful house into a very small, neat, and lovely space. But you've had to unclutter in a way that most of us only dream of.
Yes. I decided I really wanted to live simply. I love what Gandhi says. To live simply, you must simply live. And so I bought a small place in the lofts that I love. And the major thing was getting out of my big place and my collections. I'm a saver. I save clippings. I save everything. I had a lot of help. Friends helped me and got me out. And everything is dispersed. And I'm now living in a very simple place. And I think I've never been so happy.
As you enter your 90th year of life, you're also doing something which I think is worth thinking and talking about, which is making a lot of things easier for your children at some future date.
This is true, yeah. When a person dies, their family has the chore, and it's very difficult at that time to dispose of everything. They don't know what to do with everything and anything. But this is what I did, and it felt good. I was glad to do it.
We're talking to Mary Lou Cook. Was it hard to, when you move from a big space to a small space, to make all those choices of what you're going to keep and what you're going to get rid of?
I thought it might be, but it wasn't at all. I wanted so much to be in this small space, and that's what motivated me. I had no trouble with practically anything, things that I'd thought I would never, ever want to give up. And it's happened, it's worked, and as I said, I'm just really happy. It's going well.
You have done so many things in the time that you've lived in Santa Fe. What activities have stuck with you over all these years, and what have you dropped?
Oh, my. Well, I'm just so pleased with the Living Treasures that we started that is now known all over the country and admired all over the country. I've worked with nuclear issues for years, and I'm glad that we have helped educate people as to what nuclear really means. People use this word and they have no idea of the horrors of nuclear. So I've done that. I've been very happy working with that. And a group I've recently worked with the last couple, 3 years is a creativity center, and we have put together a bracelet. Our first project is this lovely black silicone bracelet, something like Lance Armstrong got everyone to wear. And the bracelet has one word. The word is kindness. And on this bracelet, we have kindness in 17 different languages. We're calling it a world bracelet. We hope everyone will help get it around the world. So far, we are just amazed at the support and the acceptance. The Chicago Art Institute ordered 2,100 bracelets. Different cities are ordering this, and different schools are ordering them from us. We have a website, and so we have a site in Santa Fe where people can pick up their first bracelet. The first bracelet is always a gift, and that is at Hemp, the Hemp store on Water Street. So if you would like one of our bracelets, drop by Hemp, pick up your bracelet, and then there will be some instructions with the bracelet as to our website, and we ask everyone at noon to stop for to pause for a second and think of everyone around the world who's wearing this bracelet of kindness. And we're also getting lots of stories fed to us as different kindness. I think kindness to me is the most transformational force there is. So I'm really thrilled with this project.
Tell us some of the stories you've gotten from people.
Well, I went to a school here in town, the sixth grade at Salazar, and they have a program. This was last Christmas, and they had Christmas trees in the hall, real Christmas trees, and when anyone did a kindness, they would write it on a piece of paper and then hang it on the Christmas tree. And the kids in the sixth grade helped me many different days folding and putting the bracelets together so we could hand them out. And they were so turned on, and it's just so neat that this one bracelet with this one word has done so much.
We're talking to Mary Lou Cook, who is not only doing this creativity center, but is teaching a workshop called Getting Organized, and the telephone number for Mary Lou is 983-2894. We'll give that again at the end of the segment here. What else is the Creativity Center going to do? What kind of, is it classes or?
Our original intent was to have cat classes. We have never been able to get a place, a roof. None of us are fundraisers, and we have been so busy enjoying ourselves and into this one project that we haven't done anything on getting a place to teach. We have entertained various ideas in a creative fashion of doing traveling classes and so forth, which we can do. But the main idea I want, and we want children and adults to understand the importance of original thinking. None of this being in the box and repeating things that we were taught over and over and over. We think original thinking is so important, and it's using our own creative juices and our own creative forces. When we do this, we are a very satisfied person. We're happy because this is our purpose, is to be happy and to help each other and have good ideas and move on with things.
Easier said than done. How do you teach people to think in an original way? Is that a contradiction in terms right there? You're teaching somebody to be original?
It's something that I've done for years. I've taught around the country. I've taught a class called Creativity for years and years and years. And people have asked me, how do you teach it? And I must say, it's not easy to describe what I do. But I do it, and I do it in 3 hours. It's simply something that I've been able to do, and so I'm using it to the best of my ability. And the classes that are coming up are going to be great fun. They're full of ideas. It's just the whole thing is to use your own ideas. And I love brainstorming. I think brainstorming also encourages creativity very much. And so at various times, our small group has done jobs for people in the community, for businesses who wanted some ideas of growth or the next step for them. So we've done that, and that is using our own creativity, our group.
Well, Mary Lou Cook, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
I love being with you, Mary Charlotte.
It's great to have you, as always. And Mary Lou Cook's number is 983-2894 to sign up for the Getting Organized workshop.
Yeah.
And you teach them at various times, and you take people's names until it fills up, and then you do the next round.
That's right.
Mary Lou Cook is an artist, teacher, minister, and living treasure. Thanks once again.
Mm. It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil computer services. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And by the way, thanks very much to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. And then this morning, Good Morning Jazz features Women in Jazz, and Giants of Jazz in the afternoon is the second of two programs dedicated to the late Max Roach. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Ciao.